is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation, Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
I know I don't normally do this at the top of Mystery Hour. I'd nod back to the last thing we did in the programme proper, but this book is, I mean, crikey, if you've got anyone in your life who enjoys stories about the military or the SAS in particular, this has got to be at the top of your Christmas list. And of course, if you've got anyone who enjoys board games, well, I'll get onto that in a moment. Because Mystery Hour is upon us, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio. We provide illumination. We provide education. Edification. Edification, do you think? Illumination, education, edification. Any other Asians? There's no vacation. But it's a celebration of knowledge. It's a celebration of enlightenment. Because what we do is find out what you know, not what you can find out. It's quite an old person's premise, this. Because when we were growing up, you couldn't just Google everything. You had to actually memorise stuff and learn it and know it and then drag it up when needed. And that's what Mystery Hour is. Someone asks a question and someone else provides an answer. But it's an answer that will be built upon the journey you have taken through life. It may be a spectacularly banal junction in that journey. You may know what you know because you saw it on the telly last night. But equally, you may know what you know because of a curious turn your life took 20 years ago when you found yourself working on the bridge of an oil tanker or designing toasters in Macclesfield or becoming the professor of the public understanding of science at the University of Brighton as one of our most regular contributors has. Do you see what I mean? So that's why I ask what your qualifications are. So how do you know what you know? I don't mean you've got a cycling proficiency from Stourport Police Station in 1983, or that you've got a Bag of Gymnastics Award 4 or anything like that, or a degree, although the degree might be relevant, of course, to why you know what you know, but it could be something completely strange, or it could be utterly breathtakingly relevant. So I said, well, how on earth do you know that? And you say, well, actually, I invented it. In which case, you'll almost certainly get a Ray Liotta, which is the largest, highest, greatest accolade that can be bestowed upon any listener to any radio programme anywhere in the world. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. There is also a prize this week, and last week and next week. And that prize is a copy of the Mystery Hour board game, which is brilliant, I have to say. I know I mention it every week, but I don't think I actually stress what a fantastic game it is. And with Christmas now on the horizon, allow me to take a moment to tell you how it works. So what has been over the years one of the best things about Mystery Hour is that, oddly enough, the wrong answers. Or the plausible answers that are actually, it turns out, not correct, or the ones that are built on urban myths. So what you get on Mystery Hour, you get a board game. As Keith says, my answers, that they feature quite heavily, my wrong answers. So what you get with the board game is a card with a question on it, and then there is a choice of two answers, one of which is correct and one of which is not correct, but has probably popped up on the programme when the question did. But then there's the third option, which is where the game really achieves quite a special status, which is you can make up an answer in the here and now. So you take a few minutes at the beginning of the game to go through your cards and look at what your questions are. And what I advise you do is jot down the bones of the fake answer you're providing so that it looks like you're reading it off the card. Do you see what I mean? Now, people get quite serious and sly playing board games, as you know, especially families. So it's important that you don't give any clues as to which one is the made-up question, because that's the only one that isn't written down in advance before you deal the cards. So you can put the You can put the fake question in any order. There's two fake questions, one of which you made up and one of which we provide in the game. And then everybody else has to guess what the correct answer is. Some people might know, of course. That's allowed as well. You get rewarded for your knowledge. The more you've listened to Mystery Hour, the better you will do in the game. And in fact, the more you've listened to it, the better you will be at coming up with the fake answers. Because if someone picks your fake answer as the right answer, you get double points. That's really what you're going for. The real pay dirt comes when your fake answer is so convincing and so persuasive that lots of people playing vote for it. And that is how you really win. You're much better off coming up with better fake answers than you are with getting the correct answer to somebody else's question. And then my friend Scott, he told me last night his daughter brought it downstairs and asked if she could play. And I'm reading this message from him and I'm quite touched. I'm thinking, that's lovely. And he goes, I thought you'd like to know this, James. He goes, so I asked her, why do you want to play that game, darling? Thinking that she'd say something like, oh, it's got James on the box, or it's nice and he's your friend. He said, it's the only one I could reach in the cupboard, Dad, she said. So thanks for that. But they've discovered a way with a six-year-old that you can play the game as well, because obviously the six-year-old's not going to be able to come up with fake answers. So you just ignore the third option. You've got the card, the correct answer and the wrong answer, and you just guess or work out which is the right answer and the wrong answer. That's not even in the instructions. That's Scott's little variation on the game for younger players. So it's all there, and you can get hold of it at mysteryhour.co.uk or in John Lewis. It doesn't feature in the advert, I'm afraid. I thought it might. I thought it might get an appearance in the new Christmas advert, but it doesn't get. No products do, to be fair. It's beautifully moving. Made me cry this morning, that advert, if you haven't seen it yet. I think it's probably on the LBC website if you want to go and have a look. There it is. So you can get it from mysteryhour.co.uk directly, or you can get it from Amazon, of course, and you can get it also from John Lewis. But with Christmas on the way, I thought I'd just give you a quick heads up on what it's all about, because I know some people still think it's a pretend. They don't think Keith is a real person. They don't think the board game is a real product, but it is, and now you know. And whoever makes the best contribution to today's programme, to today's Mystery Hour, will win their own Mystery Hour board game. I can't say fairer than that. The terms and conditions can be found at lbc.co.uk. It is 11 minutes after 12. Let's kick things off. Gary's in Hassocks. Gary, question or answer?
Good afternoon. I've got a question about airport security, which has been driving me crazy for a long, long time.
Yes.
My wife has, when we go through airport security, she has a plastic bag. Inside that is 400 or 500 milliliter bottles of lotions and potions and creams. I don't know what she takes.
Yeah.
So the question is, why are you allowed to have all those small bottles of liquid, but you can't take a big bottle, like a bottle of Coke or a bottle of water?
I think I know this.
I thought you might.
Well, I'm sorry, I know. But
I'm hoping it's not connected to the profit airport shops make on selling bottled water.
No, it was in its first instance, and at the point of its introduction, it was clearly a security measure. And I'm pretty sure
course,
it remains so. But if you've got a hazardous liquid, then, and you have nefarious intent. So let's, for the sake of argument, say that you've got something corrosive that you're going to use to do bad stuff.
Yeah.
If you've got 500 and you need, let's say, half a litre of it to make an impact on whatever it is that you have nefarious intent towards, if you've got to empty out 5 little bottles in order to get the corrosive liquid or the acid deployed in a nasty way, you're not going to be able to do it, are you? You're going to get
well, you
punched.
You are, because you just buy a bottle in an airport shop and empty your little bottles
into
the bottle.
They're going to spot that, mate, aren't they?
Not if you go into the bathroom and do it.
Oh, well, I mean, really? Someone's carrying in one big bottle and 5 little bottles into the bathroom? I mean, there are ways round this. There's ways round all security measures. But the question of why they have that security measure in place is, if you prefer, to make it much, much harder to have a half a litre of corrosive liquid. Well, I presume this is the answer. I'm not going to give myself a round of applause. Don't worry.
I don't know. I think if you got corrosive liquid, 100 millilitres could do a lot of damage.
Yeah, but not as much as a litre could.
If you got,
which is your question.
Bottles,
which is, yeah, I know. I'm not claiming it's foolproof. I'm just, I mean, what do you think the reason is?
I don't know.
Well, I've just given you an answer. Who are you picking holes in my answer when you haven't got one of your own?
I think they're hanging on to they sell bottled water in the airports.
Yeah, but that's no. The question is about why it was introduced, not why.
No, yeah, why it was introduced initially. I don't think you're allowed to take any liquids initially in your hand luggage, and then they brought in the 100 milliliter limit.
Yeah, that's right. But we'll find out. Someone will know this. It's a great question, actually. I'm surprised we haven't done it before. But I'd be slightly surprised if my answer isn't close to correct. Although quite often when I have the cockiness to say something like that out loud, I end up being served up with a fat slice of humble pie before close of play. Thank you, Gary. So the little bottles on the planes, why? Given that, well, you heard what Gary said, there's lots of ways you could get around the forbidding or the outlawing of the big bottles of liquid. You could pour the contents of lots of little bottles into a big bottle. Special for Rosalind is this. Could you please repeat on air the name of the book you just interviewed the author about? I just couldn't catch the name. I can indeed. It's Speed, Aggression, Surprise. Easy to remember, Rosalind. SAS by Tom Petch, which should be second on everybody's Christmas list after the Mystery Hour board game.
Much like you, I've got a lot to complain about, like open-toe sandals. Who thought that was a good idea? Who wants to look at toes? Adults who drink squash. Listen, you're a fully grown person. But I just got my Sky TV and broadband and I've got no complaints.
Sky has the lowest number of complaints made to Ofcom for pay TV and fixed line broadband. To find out more, visit ofcom.org.uk. We're happy because you're happy.
Oh, hang on though. Noisy eaters. They're annoying.
Sky. Believe in better.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
18 minutes after 12 is the time. Let's crack on and get some more questions on the board as quickly as possible. Charlie's in Nottingham. Charlie, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. It's a question, please.
Carry on, Charlie.
So I had a cold the other day and I was sniffing honey and lemon in hot water. And I'm just wondering, why can you smell things when you breathe in through your nose, but then you can't smell them when you breathe out through your nose?
What do you mean? Because your olfactory senses are in your nose, so you're drawing the... I may have misunderstood you, but what you smell is being drawn into your nose when you breathe in, and the thing what you would smell is being blown away from your nose when you breathe out.
But are those receptors directional though?
They're in your nose.
So what if you breathe out of your nose though?
But what are you breathing out of your nose?
Well, you're breathing out the same thing that you breathed in, surely.
Oh, I see what you mean. Ah, okay.
Is it a stupid question?
No, it's not. I don't think it is a stupid question. I think I'm being a bit slow on the uptake, which happens occasionally. So you breathe in through your nose and you get the aroma of... Did you really only have lemon and honey? You didn't have a little tot of something else in there just to take the... Because it's not a hot toddy, that, is it? That's just a sort of...
just something that my mum's always done. So
yeah, but does she not put a shot of Jameson's in there or something like that?
She might do, but she didn't do that when I was a kid, so that's what I've learned to do.
No, fair enough. So you're breathing it in, and it's quite a pungent, it's a nice smell, you've got the honey and lemon, and then when you breathe out, you think, in a sense, you're still... All right, yeah, it's not a stupid question. Well, I don't think it is.
It's not related to having a cold either, because after the cold's gone recently, I've been able to just do the same thing, and I still can't smell breathing out.
No, hang on. I've got something here, actually. I've got one of my smoothies here. Wait there. I'll just test it for you. I've put all sorts in it this morning. Yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting to be able to smell anything when I breathe out. But that's not an answer to the question of why I can't, is it?
No, it's just niggling the back of my brain. No, that's the only reason I'm asking.
Yeah, why does whatever it is you smell not pass over whatever it is in your nose on the way out in the same way that it does on the way in or something? Thank you, Charlie. Stay safe. I might just have a sip of that, actually, while Mark is telling me whether he has a question or an answer.
Hello, James. I was going to have a sip myself of some coffee, but that's another thing. It's a question.
Yes.
A question. The question is, I was driving back across France a couple of weeks ago, middle of the night, friend in the passenger seat, fantastic drive, trying to keep awake and listening to some really cool music, early 80s, electric-y stuff.
Yeah, it was, cool beans. What, Giorgio Moroder? What was it?
No. It was Simple Minds, New Gold Dream, 81, 82, 83, 84. Fantastic. And you get that kind of like the shiver down the spine and the goosebumps. I said to my friend, I said, mate, do you get that? Do you get the kind of that's such an amazing piece of music? And he looked at me going, hey, are you from another planet?
Tingles.
And I kind of went, you don't know, you just did not understand that.
Well, they just got different tastes to you.
It's just some tracks that, you know, you could like, I don't know, Ultravox or something, Vienna and stuff like that, or just lovely pieces of classical music. And then, you know, not everything. And then you'll get this kind of like the tingle down your spine.
No, I get it. I know what it is. Does your mate not get it with anything?
Correct. He does not get it with anything.
So the question is, why do some of us get goosebumps listening to music but other people don't?
Absolutely correct.
That's a great question. I presume everybody would, wouldn't you? If you do, I do.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, this is amazing. you're a loony.
I'll tell you what, I don't know if you've heard A-ha's new album yet, but that is full of tingles. And I know...
I do quite like A-ha, especially their early stuff.
No, but this is, this, is, this is a return to it's very similar to some of the early stuff. It's called... I'll tell you what it's called in a minute. I keep thinking it's called King of the North, but that's from something else, isn't it? That's from Game of Thrones or something like that.
It's Game of Thrones.
True North or something like that? I'll tell you exactly what it's called. True North by A-ha. It's got one track on it called You Have What It Takes. If that doesn't send tingles down your spine, Mark, I'm a banana. It's a superb return to form. A friend, thank you, mate. I'll get you an answer to that. I'm just going to wax lyrical about A-ha for a couple of minutes, so feel free to hang up. Pal of mine is a hotshot music critic. I won't tell you what newspaper he writes for because I don't want to embarrass him. Hotshot music critic, one of the best in the business. I turned him onto this the other day because, like a lot of people, he thinks that A-ha are kind of an 80s teeny pop band, which they're just not. They're one of the finest live bands on the planet. There's a documentary about them, which came out earlier this year, that is, I mean, seminal. But the new album, True North, is a thing of absolute beauty. Well, so three albums came out at the same time. The new Arctic Monkeys album, the new Taylor Swift album, and the new A-ha album, right? The A-ha one is the best. And don't even at me. Don't even at me. Just thank me later. Thank you, Mark. Paul's in Worcester. Paul, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
Always good to speak to you. So, airport
Likewise.
Security,
yes.
What they're doing is they're reducing the amount of a product that you can bring through.
Yes.
And you were actually quite close to it. So, what happens is that if you mix certain products together, they will then become dangerous products, particularly they can give off gases. So,
yes.
And they're in things like shampoos and other products, which I'm not going to go into. So what they do is they reduce it right down to 100 mils, that if you then do happen to have nefarious means for doing things, is that you don't have enough of the product to bring together to become a hazard.
Yeah. And so if you've got five little bottles of it, you would have enough. You could go into the toilet.
You wouldn't because what happens is you're restricted to one item and they do test them. So if you go and you watch, they actually do dip these things and put them into machines.
Sometimes they make you taste it, don't they?
They do. And so that'll come up as a shampoo or an alkaline or an acid or something else.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to do is reduce. So if you bring alkalines and acids together, they can then give off gases. If you bring certain cleaning materials together, you'll go, oh, that doesn't smell very nice, and some people have quite bad effects from that.
Yeah. That's a brilliant answer. You've done it.
Thank you.
Nailed it. Qualifications?
Paramedic.
Okay, yeah, lovely one. Round of applause.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Great work. Nice one, Paul. And we've ticked that one off the list. Owen is in Anglesey. Owen, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Right, me and my children were outside the other day and there was a massive thunderstorm.
Hmm.
And my son asked, how far away would you have to... Say, if you were swimming in the sea,
yeah,
how far would you have to be from the strike for you not to get electrocuted?
Gosh. So, like, fork lightning hits the sea?
Yeah. You're swimming in the sea, having a nice time.
Well, you wouldn't be having that nice a time. It's a blooming thunderstorm, isn't it? So lightning. Well, no, you might be. You might be going, wow, man, this is incredible. I'm like communing with nature. And then if it hit you on the head, you'd be in all sorts of trouble. But if it was 10 yards away, would you be okay? 100 yards away? 100.
So how far do you have to be for it to dissipate the danger?
I like it. I hope you never find out.
I'm not asking the question because it's my birthday either, hoping to win a board game.
Well played. I like that. I don't mind a little bit of cynical heart-tugging. That's fine. But I'll tell you what I will give you, because Keith has had this ready. He's got this ready all the time. We only pull it out about twice a year. Is that it? Hang on. Stay there. Where did that come from? That's Nick's, isn't it? It is fantastic. Thank you, Owen. We shall endeavour to get you an answer to that. And do we have to pay Nick Abbott a royalty for that now? Is that only if someone tells him? Tina's in Lewis. Tina, question or answer?
I have a question, please.
Carry on.
I'd like to know why some of the tins in my cupboard, I mean, I can stack them all, but some of them stack with little lips onto each other, and others, my Heinz soup, for example, don't. So I want to know why. Because in my cupboard, it's not a problem. I've only got 10 tins. But in a supermarket...
You've only got what? 10 tins?
10,
10 tins of food.
10 tins. Tina's 10 tins.
Tina's 10 tins.
So they could,
do they
call you 10 tin Tina?
They could do, couldn't they? Yes. I wish I had, I was going to say I wish I had 12 now, but.
12 tins Tina. 10 tin
11.
Tina.
I wish I had 11. And if we're going down the birthday route, it was my birthday yesterday.
Okay, concentrate. He's made a cross for his own back now. You should see his face. He's got flipping out. I was trying to chew. I've done this now. I can't do. I completely agree with you. Heinz beans are fine, but Heinz soups are not.
No, I mean, and my tuna's fine.
Tuna is probably the most stackable of tins, isn't it? Because it's short and squat, so it doesn't topple as easily as a bigger tin, a more conventional tin.
But then I was wondering if there's just something, you know, from the Heinz soup that a superiority thing. But I can put my Oh, I didn't realise that.
Well done. Tintina with a soup-based pun.
I'm carrying on. I can put my supermarket tomatoes on top of my soup, so it makes no sense to me.
Well, own brand.
Own brand ones, can I say the brand?
Yeah, of course you can.
My Tesco's tomatoes can go on top of my Tesco.
The tinned tomatoes or the tinned soup?
The tinned tomatoes can go on top of the tinned soup.
Right, but the tinned soup can't go on top of the tinned tomatoes.
Oh, let me just try.
Yeah, go on, I'll wait. 10 tins.
Yeah, no, look, listen, no, no. Well, it will go on top, but it likes
but it's
to
not sitting. It's not sitting comfortably.
It isn't, no.
Then I'll begin.
No.
Right, you're on. That's a brilliant question, actually. And I know it really is. I have more than 10 tins in our cupboard, and for some reason, I've taken it upon myself to be in charge of stacking the cupboards, because I get so cross when we go out, when we buy something and then I find that we already had it in the cupboard. I'm turning into everybody's dad, basically, is a short way. So I stack the tins. I even bought from Lakeland, Tina. You'll like this, 10 tin Tina. I bought like a platform so that.
Oh, right, yeah.
Do you see
yeah.
what I mean? So instead of the tins being, you can't see what's behind, I've got a platform now so that the back row of tins sits slightly above the front row of tins. So you've got double the vision, but the same amount of tins. It's impossible to lose a tin in my cupboard these days.
Which I think would be great, but then I instantly go to that's something else to wipe, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you don't have enough tins, really, to worry about. You've only got 10 tins, Tina.
I've only got 10.
So you don't need the tier. You don't need the tin tier that I've got for my tins, because I'll probably have 20 tins, 10 on each tier. 10 tier tin, 10 tier tin, tin tin. I'm going to get you an answer if it kills me to that.
That would be brilliant.
Thank
Thanks
you,
very
Tina.
Much.
Take
Love
care. Enjoy your lunch. It's 12:30. Holly Harris is here with the headlines.
If you're looking to trim your spending, checking for subscriptions that you no longer need could be an easy win. The Barclays app makes it simple. You can view your subscriptions and upcoming payments in one place, helping you to manage your spending. You might even spot some other savings you can make right now too. For more money help, search Barclays Cost of Living. Barclays, make money work for you. You need to be 11 or over to access this product or service using the app. T's and C's apply.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 12:34 and we've done that one. Why can't you smell on the way out in the same way that you can smell on the way in? I like that question from Charlie, and I'm not going to let anybody tell me otherwise. Why do some people get goosebumps or tingles when they are listening to music or watching telly? Actually, you just get it like a moment and you have a physical reaction to an emotional response. That's for Mark. Why? I think we did this relatively recently, but listen, I'm 50. I can't remember what I had for breakfast. Never mind what we did 3 weeks ago on Mystery Hour. But if a lightning hits the sea, how far away from the point of contact do you have to be safe? And why are Tina's tins not more easily stackable, particularly the Tesco tomato tins? No, the Tesco tomato tins, Tina's Tesco tomato tins are stackable, but the soup is not. And I love that question, because if you're a bit fussy about your cupboards, like I am, the tins that don't stack, they're the bane of my life, I tell you. And I've even got tears. Not tiny tears, normal sized. 12:35 is the time. Mike's in Falmouth. Mike, question or answer?
Hi, James. Question, please.
Carry on.
Basically, I'm just wondering whether it's possible for, say, a celebrity to copyright or trademark their voice. So, for example, when you listen to, say, a radio advert or a TV advert and you hear what you think sounds like a sort of familiar celebrity voice, obviously that company using that voice would probably cost quite a lot of money to use that celebrity. What stops them using a, say, impressionist or someone that can do a similar voice?
That's a great question. That's a really, really good question, actually. Because,
for example, if you wanted to do a TV advert and someone wanted to use your voice, what action can you take against them?
I don't think I'd charge much more than an impressionist, to be honest with you. I don't think I'm in that category. But you never know. I mean, you know, cost of living crisis around the corner. I might get myself a voiceover agent.
There you go, yeah.
Could be quite nice. But because there was a period, wasn't there, where every advert on television seemed to be the same people. Lovejoy, Ian McShane at one point, you're probably too young to remember, but there was a period when Ian McShane, I think I counted him on three different adverts in one commercial break once. And so just because it's like fashion almost, obviously the focus groups say that some voices are really, really trustworthy, but I don't know if it was him. Maybe it was someone who was deliberately trying to sound like him. Peter Kay,
yeah, exactly.
Very distinctive voice, you'd really spot him on a voiceover. Tony Slattery used to do loads, I think, back in... Stephen Fry has done a lot of, or at least we think he has, but if you find someone doing a brilliant Stephen Fry impression...
And you get the guy that's doing the X Factor kind of voice as well, but that's so similar to kind of copy.
Or John Bent, was it John Bent? Marcus Bentley at Big Brother? DS6! Him. That's like he's in the room, isn't it, Mike? That's uncanny. I mean, is he able to sue DS6? Is he able now to sue me for doing an absolutely pitch-perfect impression of him? So if you did it, if you had a very good Stephen Fry impersonation on an advert for crisps, would Stephen Fry have any recourse based upon the fact that everybody listening is clearly intended to believe that that is Stephen Fry?
Yeah.
That's a great question. Why do you want to know? What have you got planned? Who can you do? What voices can you do?
I could do nothing. I was just listening to the advert and I thought, that sounds like somebody. And then I thought, well, is it
maybe
actually
it's
them
not.
Or is it someone that sounds like them?
Yeah, I do that in here sometimes. I say to Keith, is that so-and-so? Is that something? We often don't know, actually. I like that. Can you do that? Can you in any way trademark a voice? 03456060973. Paul's in Runcorn. Paul, question or answer?
Answer on the Heinz Beans tins.
Carry on. Tina's tins.
Thank you. So it's to do with how they are manufactured. So some of them, they'll just roll up a bit of metal and stick a top and bottom on. And then others, like the Heinz ones, are kind of like pressed through to form a shape with then just the lid put on top. And that's why they don't stack. Although, so you should then, on the Heinz ones, even if they've got the ring pour on the top, be able to flip them over and then open them with a can opener on the bottom. The pressed ones, like your...
Why don't they do them all the same? Why don't they do them all the same?
So I think the tins where they stick the top and bottom on are sort of a cheaper quality. So part of Heinz's reason for doing it is because they're less likely to have a seal break and cause leaks and damage and stuff like that.
So they do it with the soup but not with the beans. They'll do the cheaper tin for the soup than they do for the beans.
Well, I think all Heinz tins are just kind of all come out the factory.
No, you weren't listening. Tina was absolutely clear. You can stack the beans but you can't stack the soups.
So that'll be it then.
What?
So they don't want the soup leaking at the bottom of your tin if the seal's not done.
So what's the cheaper one?
The cheaper ones, they're just where they roll a bit of tin and then stick it.
Yeah, but is that the soup? Is the soup in the cheaper tin?
No, the soup's in the nicer tin.
So the more expensive tins are the ones that you can't stack?
Incredibly.
That makes no sense. That makes no sense. What are your qualifications?
Qualifications are I swapped with my wife and became a house husband about 6 years ago.
Then
suddenly realise that you can't put things in the cupboard nicely if you buy...
So this is entirely speculative, then, your answer?
Well, I sort of researched it years and years ago when we swapped over and I had to learn how to do different things like operate a washing machine and put groceries away and things like that, and they become...
And wait, so you researched why some tins are stackable and so... I just don't understand why they'd pay more money on making a tin less convenient.
Well, I don't know. You should. I don't work for Heinz.
You can't claim your correct answer and then just dismiss my quibbles because I don't buy your qualifications.
With, the better quality of tin that won't leak, but in the pressing process, then they don't stack.
That doesn't make sense. You would, because it would be, because stacking would be a priority and leakability would be a priority. So the better tins, the best. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe the price you pay for having a better quality tin is the lack of stackability.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you... it's not the best qualification I've ever heard, Paul.
Well, you know, I think it's important that we're breaking down these cultural barriers.
I knew you were going to say that, because I'm not having that, actually. I'm not in any way like passing comment upon gender stereotypes or the division of household labour. I'm merely questioning the quality of your qualification. Because, actually, if you want to get all feminist about it, that means literally anybody who you would describe or we would describe as a housewife would have full qualifications to answer this question, which may include Tina.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I'll give you
I'll take half.
I'm not giving you half. You've talked your way out of half. I'm going to give you a tiny snatch of applause.
Oh,
there we go. Thank you very much. Thanks. And I'll give you the rest of it if it turns out to be right, but I'm not having that. It started well. I don't know. It all fell apart towards the end. Why can you stack some tins and not others? James is in Crowthorne. James, question or answer?
I've got a question, please, James.
Carry on.
It's actually from my son, who's six. His name's Max. Okay. And every night he asks me a question before he goes to bed.
I don't have an
answer for this one.
Okie dokie.
So when you eat or drink something...
Yes.
Sometimes you produce gases...
Yes.
...that either come out of your mouth or a little lower down.
Yes.
How does your body decide which end to produce the gas? So if you drink a can of Coke, how does that come out as a burp? But if you eat something else, it comes out as wind. And I just don't have an answer. So I'm hoping as a doctor somewhere, they might have some...
What determines whether the gas goes up or down?
Absolutely. And I just don't have an answer.
No, I like that one, actually. Well done, Max. It's a good question. Although I suspect that the language he deployed was a little less...
I kept it.
Well, I'm grateful that you did. It's a family programme, as you demonstrate by bringing Max's question to the table. Because it's not obvious, is it? Because I was going to say, well, it depends whether it's reached digestive state, but sometimes you can do a burp and you can taste what you ate.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that take us back to Charlie's question about noses?
It might well do.
You can smell stuff on the way out sometimes. Oh, this is getting all very biological and anatomical. We shall find out for you, or at least for Max. Thank you, James. What determines which way gas goes, up or down, during the digestive process? 03456060973. Louisa is in Hackney. Louisa, question or answer?
It's an answer,
Carry on.
It's about copyrighting your voice.
Oh, yes.
There are two parts to this answer. Firstly, in this country, the Advertising Standards Authority has rules about passing off, so they wouldn't allow someone to use an impression of a voice that led people to think that person was actually sanctioning their project when they weren't.
Okay.
So it can be used in parody and for fun.
So
and
if you got someone to do the voice of Margaret Thatcher or Ronald Reagan to sell, I don't know, dog food, everyone would know it wasn't really them.
Exactly. Okay. So there is a process by which almost all commercials in this country had to go through an approval process and they wouldn't be able to get away with it. As far as copyright is concerned, it's a bit more problematic. So at the moment, there's a Copyright Act going through Parliament to change the copyright law. And with AI coming on and being able to synthesise voices or not use that much of somebody's recording to copy their voice, at the moment, Equity and various other creators' unions are pushing for more coverage, for more rights, basically, because the act as it currently exists, if someone, for example, was to synthesize your voice,
yes,
you would have, under this current new act going through Parliament, no rights.
What?
They could sell it and you would have no rights. The AI companies currently are allowed to scrape for information to teach their software, but they're not allowed to commercialize what they've learnt in that sense.
Right.
But the new act, I believe, will lift that restriction. So somebody could synthesize a voice using maybe parts of your voice or even your whole voice and use it and make money from it, and you would have no rights.
But they couldn't put it on an advert.
No, but they could put it on a corporate video that you wouldn't necessarily know was happening, or they could create a sample that they said you said on your radio program that you didn't say. And it's a huge minefield.
It is. I'm going to find out a little bit more.
Talk to Equity. The Musicians Union have similar concerns about musicians and sampling. And at the moment, the government seem to be leaning more towards supporting innovation than necessarily protecting the rights of the original creators.
The rights of the artists.
It's a lot of problem. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I have to ask what your qualifications are, although you've provided some clues.
I'm a professional voiceover artist.
I thought you might be. I could tell, actually, when you came on. Do you want to mention any of your recent work? Have we heard it lately?
There's things I can't tell you about.
No.
You might have heard me randomly in MRI scanner.
Gosh.
Or there's various commercials on the radio, on television, I pop up in all sorts of random places.
Fantastic. And you earn a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. And you have a beautiful voice, as I'm sure I'm not the first person to tell you. 12:46 is the time.
The Galloping Pony. An American spirit. All power. All performance. All styling. All electric. An icon reimagined. The all-electric Ford Mustang Mach-E. For the head and the heart. Ford. Bring on tomorrow. Search Mustang Mach-E.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
12:51 is the time. The tin stuff is really going... Well, I mean, people are sending me footage of unstackable Heinz beans tins now. Maybe the premise of the question was wrong. Maybe I misunderstood 10 Tin Tina's original. She said the soup didn't stack, I think, but the beans did. Well, it doesn't matter. Why do some tins stack and other tins don't? Quick word about my colleagues over at Capital Breakfast who've been teasing me. I'm feeling quite discriminated. I think it's getting a bit ageist now. Mocking me for... plug in the Jingle Bell Ball, which is going to be amazing this year. I think Stormzy's doing Sunday night, isn't he? So it's absolutely sensational. No, Stormzy's doing the Saturday night. It's going to be sensational. And they busted me completely for nearly calling them children. I heard it on yesterday's show. And I was trying to do some banter, like cross-station banter. It's you know, like the good old days of Smashy and Nicey. And I said, chill on the youths. But they played it out on the Capital Breakfast show and they completely... But I can't even pretend that I haven't been caught bang to rights. I was in the process of calling them children. And then I remembered that Sean and Sonny J, they're my teammates on Eggheads. It hasn't gone out yet, actually. And they were brilliant. They did a lot better than me. They were brilliant on it. So I thought, well, I can't call them... I don't mind calling Roman a child, Roman Kemp. I'm interviewing his dad on Full Disclosure this week. So it would be somehow appropriate, really, for me to reference his childishness. But I didn't want to insult Sean and Sonny J. And then I listened to it yesterday morning and Sean is leading the attacks on me, frankly. So I regret my kindness and my concern for those children. 12:52 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Back to mystery. Our Dean is in Miyazaki in Japan. Crikey. Question or answer, Dean?
It's an answer, thank you. Well pronounced, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's quite phonetic, isn't it, I think? Kind of. Anyway,
yeah, it's not too bad once you get used to it, actually, and it's an easy place. I'm ringing about the question about why you cannot smell when you breathe out.
Yes.
So there's two parts to this. The first part is what happens when you actually breathe in. So when you breathe in, along the mucus of your nose are these things called odorant-binding proteins, and they grab a hold of what you smell, and they take it to the receptors. That's how you smell. Things that are particularly pungent usually bind to these very, very well and, you know, kind of overload your sense.
Yeah.
So when you're breathing out, well, what are you breathing out? That's the second part. It's respiration. When you breathe oxygen in, you breathe carbon dioxide out. And that's the only real thing apart from nitrogen that you're breathing out in any substantial amount.
And this is respiration as opposed to burping or something like that. It's respiration that you're describing. So there's nothing coming
exactly.
out.
Exactly. So you're bringing oxygen in, carbon dioxide and some nitrogen as well coming out. But at the same time, there's nothing for those proteins as it's coming out to kind of grab and take to your receptors to smell.
Beautifully done. Qualifications?
I did a chemistry degree a number of years ago, now 10 years ago, I feel old. And my thesis was on using odorant binding proteins to detect explosives. So I had to kind of learn the olfactory process somewhat at the time.
Sensational. Round of applause for Dean. And what took you to Miyazaki?
Thank you very much. I came here just to kind of travel, to be honest with you. And then I kind of got, you know, I kind of enjoyed it. It's kind of nice here. It's a surfing town. It's sunny.
Cool beans. Enjoy. Thank you, Dean. Lovely stuff. 12:55 is the time. Hi, James, it's Colin. What was the name of that song on the new A-ha album that you love so much? It's called You Have What It Takes. Colin, doing some music recommendations over there. Can hear them quaking in their boots over at Capital Radio, because now I'm doing music recommendations. Just watch this space. Jason's in Southampton. Jason, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's an answer to your can question.
Right, come on then. So tins, not cans, tins.
Tins. Okay, so... Yeah. Very basically, it's all to do with the way the ingredients are cooked inside the can at the factory. So when they can the beans, they seal the beans and they have to cook it at a different temperature by steam or whatever they use.
They cook the beans in the tin?
Yes.
Oh, my days.
So it becomes a cylinder, so therefore it has to be sealed in a different way to stand the pressure. So the way they cook it. So have you ever realised sometimes when you pull the ring pull on a modern can, sometimes it lets pressure out, doesn't it?
It does always, actually.
And that's because it's been cooked in the can.
Well, you live and learn. So the ones that... And which ones can you stack and which ones can't you stack?
Well, I'll be honest, I'm using my common sense for this knowledge, but I also watched a BBC programme with that Greg Wallace.
Oh, in the factory or something like that. It's good, isn't it?
Yes.
I like that.
That's it. I don't know which way round it is, but... The ingredient, the machines make the ingredients, they put them in the can, they seal the can, they cook the ingredients, and that's where they get the pressure in the can from. So the different cans are manufactured to stand different pressures.
So that's the answer is going to be some tins are cooked in the tin, some products are cooked in the tin and some products aren't, and that determines their stackability. But we don't know which way round it is.
Correct.
Love it. Qualifications, saw it on the telly. Round of applause for Jason.
Sorry.
No, that'll do nicely. There we go.
Thank you.
I hope Tina is satisfied with that answer. 12:57 is the time. Andy's in Coventry. Andy, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
So it's a question to do with the gases.
Yes.
Why some come from the top where you burp and other ones at the back?
Yes.
So you were partially writing an answer, really.
Thank you.
When we eat food, we obviously chew it and we swallow it, and that's got air with it as we swallow.
Yes.
So that air will build up in the stomach, and the stomach wants to release the air, so you burp the air out.
Yes.
From the sphincter. Now, from the other end, so all that food we've gone through the digestion process.
Yes.
It's gone through your stomach and everything else, and it's gone through the intestines. And there are gases that are produced from the digestion processes, which is why we get gases.
Yeah.
And it's just too far for it to come back.
I mean, it's reached the bowels and everything by then.
Yeah.
And so it goes out your bum.
Foot long.
Yeah. There it is. Yeah. Oh, brilliant answer. So why then, and also, so the reason why sometimes when you burp, you can get a nice little reminder of what you've been eating or drinking is actually it just brings a bit with it. Sheila, do you mind? I'm trying to present a radio. I'm trying to present a radio program. So it's undigested at that point. It's the air coming back up, but bringing with it some of the aromas of whatever delicious comestibles you've recently consumed.
Yeah. And if you eat very hot food, you burp a lot sooner because you swallow a lot of air as you're eating it because it's too hot.
To cool it or fizzy, or very fizzy drinks, you will burp a lot more.
Yeah.
Oh, what a brilliant answer, Andy. Qualifications?
I'm a medical education nurse.
Well, take a huge round of applause for Andy. Absolutely beautifully done. Did we get every single thing this week? So we did the little bottles. We didn't do the goosebumps and lightning. Very, very frightening. Did we? Why do you get goosebumps? Why do some people get goosebumps when they're listening to music while other people don't? That was lovely. Well done. I need to pick a winner, and I'm really torn now. I'm really torn between Andy, because I thought his answer was utterly delightful, and Tintina, who I thought her question was charming. I'm going to consult my colleagues. Actually, short of time. Quickly, Keith, for a quick vote. Eleanor? Oh, it's Tina. Tina all the way. Andy, I'd have given it to you, mate, but they're just not very nice people. Sheila Fogarty's here. I'll see you tomorrow at 10.
I'm still reeling from the burping and the things coming out of your bottom.
You said sphincters.
Oh, there you go, as you do. It was like walking into a kind of all-male college junior common room when I came in today, mainly because of your end of the conversation. Thank you.